This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, November 11th, 2016. I'm Caleb Brown. The foreign policy so far detailed by President-elect Donald Trump has been scattershot and unfocused, but in January, decisions will have to be made. To help understand who runs foreign policy in Washington, Trevor Thrall, a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, describes two tribes of foreign policy thinkers.
Hillary Clinton was the least exciting version of the status quo that Democrats could have mustered. And Trump underperformed Mitt Romney. Now, with respect to foreign policy, there are, you say, two tribes that we need to understand more clearly. What are they?
The two tribes are the liberal internationalist tribe that Hillary was leading into battle during this election, and that's the tribe that's been in power thanks to bipartisan elite support for since the end of the Cold War, really. A project, you know, that involves both free trade, the globe encompassing alliance system, support for, you know, NATO and other institutions, liberal institutions around the world, but also, unfortunately, for a range of, you know, dubious interventions for, I guess, usually well-intentioned reasons all over the globe as well. So you have the liberal internationalists on the one hand, and on the other hand, you have what we might call the nativists or nationalists or Jacksonians, if you want to be sort of elegant about it, the America First crowd that Trump is representing. And obviously, they are far less interested in free trade, far more pessimistic about globalization, far more worried about immigrants and the loss of what they feel is unique to America, you know, from many different sort of places around the globe. On the upside, they're simply not nearly as interested in intervening around the world or in pursuing alliances just for alliances' sake.
So is this a paleoconservative view?
Gosh, I don't know how exactly you would describe it. It is kind of paleoconservative. It's a long throwback, I suppose you could say. And what's interesting about what makes this possible right now is that, you know, ironically, the United States is just so darn secure that we no longer have fights about foreign policy on the basis of, you know, actual security issues. During the Cold War, when you said, what's the national interest? Everyone agreed. Well, contain the Soviet Union and the march of global communism. You could disagree, as Republicans and Democrats often did, about the exact means that you would use to get there, but no one disagreed about the ends. Today, the national interest has decayed into a squabble that is based not on, you know, an assessment of external threats so much as people's different bases for you know, valuing things in the first place, people's cultural, you know, identity, politics, things like that. And so I think the arguments that Trump raised this election show that pretty clearly. We haven't treated immigration as a real foreign policy issue, you know, in a long time, but that's where we're at.
I'm thinking about Barry Goldwater's Conscience of a Conservative and the sort of, you know, plain-spoken case that he presented regarding communism. And, you know, defeating communism must be our aim was the very sort of clear statement. Well, what is that? Which tribe is that?
Yeah, that you know, frankly, is closer to the liberal internationalist crowd that Hillary represents than Trump by a good march. I mean, by a long strike. It's, you know, Trump. It's funny because America First is kind of the handy and I think, you know, kind of cool if you're going to have a tagline. That's not a bad one. But what does it really mean is the question. It doesn't mean fight communism. It doesn't mean fight terrorism. It doesn't have a global sort of, you know, this is the role of America in the world. What it really means to my ears is America alone, free from, you know, other people bothering us. It's a more isolationist vision than Goldwater's for sure.
Okay. So libertarians have something to like in both of these camps, the idea of engagement with the world through trade and friendship, not necessarily entangling alliances. And from the other camp, libertarians say, well, sure, of course the United States should be focused on its own security first and worry about those other problems later, if at all. But of course, they seem libertarians. There's something to like in both and something to truly oppose in both.
Yeah, no question. And I think the real debate is going to be for the next several months to a year is which, how much of what do you actually get from Trump? How much isolationism, how much internationalism, or even as our colleague Emma Ashford has said, how much imperialism? Trump's been so inconsistent and incoherent, you might say, on his foreign policy views that it's not clear whether he's going to mostly ignore the rest of the world in favor of domestic priorities or whether he's going to go smash ISIS and grab the oil. It's kind of hard to tell. But yes, I think if you could perhaps take an average of the Trump and Clinton approach, you might get something libertarians could be quite happy about.
One of the concerns that when I spoke with Emma recently on this, the subject of Trump and foreign policy, was that the establishment, that is the people waiting in the wings to actually make policy, and those people who tend to staff these kinds of positions in Washington and give advice and are empowered to make decisions, are the same people they've always been. And in many ways are more neoconservative, people who believe that American might is a privilege, that it is a duty, and that it imposes upon American institutions the duty to, in many cases, go around the world and fix things.
Yeah, primacy as a privilege that brings the noblesse oblige with it. And unfortunately, I think for libertarians, we're going to see pretty quickly that the there is no Trumpist bench in foreign policy. There aren't any professional D.C. folks peddling anything remotely resembling a Trumpian view of foreign policy.
To the extent that we know what that is.
To the extent we know what it is. And so most of the names you see circulating over the first day or so here are neoconservatives for the most part, primacists, people who are at the very far interventionist end of the liberal internationalist tribe, if you will. And so the question will be, who wins the internal debates in the administration? Is this a situation where Trump's instincts are going to lead and his advisors will figure out how to make the best of that? Or something maybe like you had with Bush and Cheney, is one of these other voices going to lead the fight on foreign policy because Trump, frankly, is so ignorant of it. Maybe he's going to leave it up to a Secretary of State or a national security advisor. Who knows? I think one other thing to point out here is that Trump is tapping into something that is now a permanent division among the American public. It's not just the case that Trump appeared and people decided it sounded good. He's tapping into a real division between these tribes. These tribes are going to be are permanent, and on the other hand, also they are evolving. So if we look at the electoral map among millennials, it looks very different. If you may have seen this floating around the web, but if you looked at what the Electoral College would have looked like had only millennials been able to vote, I think Trump would have won three states. Similarly, on foreign policy, millennials have something closer to the blend of the liberal internationalist camp and the Trumpian sort of more restrained camp that libertarians might be happy to see. So I think it's a division that is going to persist, but it's also going to evolve over time.
President Obama ran in 2008 on opposition to stupid wars and his pledged to bring an end to the war in Iraq, and that really resonated with people. So does that put him squarely in the camp of the liberal interventionists, or did he, as he likes to say, evolve his position in office?
Darn good question. That's, I guess only Obama could answer that really accurately because he sure sounded one way when he ran for office, governed another way for most of his 8 years, and then at the end sounded as if he might have evolved into something much more restrained in his views. But maybe regretful that he didn't find a way to implement those views. I can't tell which one is the real Obama, frankly. And the same thing will be true with Trump. We're not going to know for some time exactly who the real Trump is.
Trevor Thrall is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to this podcast with iTunes, Google Play, and with Cato's iOS app. And follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.